You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 The Voice. Local news and talk. Again, 230-8900 for Arc Point Labs. For the Yours Tears product, that definitely better than sticking Restasis in your eye. We have our friend Peter Norquist here. Well, we checked the moistness of his eyes, so far he's okay.
So far I'm okay, but you literally never know when that's going to change. It's Tucson. It's hazy outside. There's dust. There's crap everywhere. I might need eye serum.
Fentanyl fumes. Time.
Yeah.
That should be the new Arc Point commercial. Fentanyl fumes got your fumes have your eyes a little dry. Call Arc Point Labs.
There you go.
230-8900. Wow. Thank you.
Wow.
All right, before we get going on the Libertarian Happiness and Deep Thoughts Hour with our friend Peter, we do have our friend Greg Gerringer's calling in from the 9/11 Tower Challenge over at the TCC. What's up, my friend? What's going on?
Well, we are at that point where some of our people that started first are starting to finish, and as they finish, they ring the bell, and each one of them has the name of a first responder that died on 9/11, and they say that name as they ring the bell to honor their memory on the 23rd anniversary of those terrible events in 2001. Want to thank everyone who participated in the event today, and you can still help. Go to 911towerchallengefoundation.org. All of the money raised for the event goes to military and first responder charities. And since it all began, over $500,000 has been donated to those charities. So we'll stay here until the last person finishes. Again, I also want to thank our own Charles Heller, who came out and helped me this morning.
Beautiful.
So that's it. Thank you so much, Chris, for having us on the air.
Love that you guys are doing it. Love what Ben and the crew at the 9/11 Tower Challenge are doing. And remember, if you have time, over on the wall underneath one of the flags that says donated by the listeners of KVOI. See if you can find that. Take a picture for that for me, can you, please?
I need to try to do that as well. And you can check out pictures of the event on the KVOI Facebook page as well.
Look at us being so efficient. I love this. This is great. Good job, buddy.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Have a good day, Greg. That's our friend Greg Gerringer at the TCC at the 9/11 Tower Challenge. Go to 911towerchallengefoundation.org if you want to donate and support. Peter Norquist, since the last time we saw you,
yes,
and you were telling us a little closer to that microphone, please.
Oh, okay, sure.
You were warning us of electric bus purchases by the Tucson Unified School District.
That I was, yes. Yeah, and so some more things have happened since then. One of the things that I am really concerned about is that when this bond went to the public for vote and it was passed, so keep in mind it's close to $500 million, right? So this is a lot of taxpayer money that we're talking about that is going to basically be thrown into the future on the backs of our kids and, you know, their posterity. What I am really concerned about is happening is that there was a plan to basically use this as a cash cow for Green New Agenda projects. And what happened with the electric buses is the first step in that, probably. And one of the reasons I say that, so last time we spoke, I talked to you about what happened at the Bond Oversight Committee.
Yes.
So they dropped this on us with literally 3 days to do any kind of research about it. No one had even known this was coming. They argued for it, saying that, hey, if we don't take this deal, we're going to lose all these rebates, you know, the TEP rebate, EPA rebate. Of course, TPA rebate, you know, keep in mind that money is also coming from
if you don't call us by payments. The end of this infomercial, your Vegematic will now be double the price.
Right, exactly. So it goes through, you know, two of us voted against it. It ultimately passed, went to the governing board at their last meeting, not the one last night, but the one before that on, I think it was July 27th, August 27th. And so Sadie and Val, Sadie Shaw, Val Romero, did a really good job asking some tough questions about this. And one of the questions that Val asked was, well, when did the grant application process start? When did the ball get rolling to try to get this in the pipeline?
Oh, I know where this is going.
Well, and so the answer was August 2023, okay? And there had been certain assurances given by the administration before the bond had even gone to the voters that there would be no electric vehicles involved. A lot of this infrastructure, you know, was not going to be under the purview of the bond. We were going to be looking at nuts and bolts things, you know, HVACs, fixing parking lots.
Safety.
Yeah, safety.
Right? They're going to do fencing and all of this jazz.
Yeah, no, they're doing fencing.
So I just want to make sure I hear that. So when it came to the bond about transportation,
right,
what did it say about transportation, basically?
So transportation is one of the main fields. There's maybe four main fields that are covered in the actual description. So it talks about things like buses and vans, all right? And that's the loophole because it doesn't go any further. It doesn't say what kind of buses. It doesn't break down diesel, electric, whatever. So what the response is when people say, hey, you know, why are we seeing electric buses right now when this was never in the language? Well, the language is vague enough that they're covered, you know.
So, but well before the bond thing went out, mm-hmm. they were already filling out the grant application.
Yeah.
For the electric vehicles.
Right, exactly.
And now they're paying with those with bond money.
Right. Exactly. And so what my concern is, because something that Ravi Shah said at that meeting a little bit later on after the main discussion about the electric buses, is he said, be sure to be here on October 15th. We're going to have the second read for the TUSD climate action policy.
Yeah.
And we and this.
Our kids can't read. But we're doing climate action
policies. They can't read the policy, but
yeah. Well, and then he says this may be the biggest climate action policy of any school district in the United States.
Now,
right?
So let's do this. Let's go to break.
Yeah.
Brush Fire, if you're listening, I want Brush Fire called couple of days ago to tell us that in where he works, in the world of where he works, they had one of they took the TUSD electric bus for a test drive.
Right. Yeah.
Well, hold that thought. Sean, call up if you can. 790-24. We'll have Sean repeat the report and then we'll have Peter respond and react, as we say. All right, we're doing Bump Battle for music today. It's Daryl Hall and the Other Guy versus Paul Simon and the Other Guy. Wake up. All right, we're doing one of our biggest battles before Perry Como. Metallica tomorrow is going to be one of the biggest ones tomorrow. Papa Loves Mambo right after one. I can just feel it. It's going to be good. As requested, Brushfire Sean's here. He's on with Peter Norquist as part of our Libertarian Deep Thoughts and Hugging Hour here. Sean, good morning, sir.
Happy Wednesday.
Happy.
Peter, how are you doing today?
Hey, good, Sean. It's great to hear from you. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, I'm a little overly passionate about this because I know the inside.
Okay.
So repeat the Peter was not listening when you called in a couple of days ago. So please repeat your report on the electric bus.
The school bus. I know a company. They brought it down from RWC, which is the international dealer in Phoenix. They had to put it on a flatbed and bring it down because obviously it can't make it.
Right.
They parked it over to IWC. You know, this is RWC right here locally at Country Club in Alverdon, or Country Club in Irvington. Sorry about that. And when they unloaded it, I ran over there. I was going to get some pictures of it because I got a little backstage pass there. But they had to put it inside because it's too hot. They can't even park it outside. I'm like, what? Okay, wait a minute. So you just put it inside where there's like $1 million worth of specialized tooling, equipment. There's a compressor that's a bomb. And right. You park the bomb inside. And well, we can't park it outside. So they take it out the other day for its initial little queen of the ride, you know, Rahina Rodeo. It makes it from Country Club and Irvington to Alberton and Irvington and craps the bed. Throws craps. And it's right there in the mess of contractors, Irvington and Alberton. There it is, broke.
Okay.
So we tow it back to RWC. Unfortunately, RWC Tucson doesn't have any electric bus techs. just like RWC Phoenix and RWC Dallas and RWC Las Vegas. There's no, the infrastructure problem is we don't have any technicians.
Right, right.
And this lithium firebomb, you probably know the problem. They have one battery pack under the hood and two battery packs under the children.
Right,
this
right.
This is insanity.
Yeah, well, you've got in the model that I've seen, you've got a battery pack sitting right under the driver. And you can walk around to the outside on the left side, and it's clearly marked where the battery is, and it's right under the driver's seat. So this battery is probably also generating an EMF field, and, you know, I don't know how the driver's going to feel about just kind of sitting on that thing as long as they're driving around on it. But
where's my bus driver's union?
Yeah, but no, Sean, hey, thanks for calling back in and reiterating that. I appreciate it while I'm here, because this underscores, a couple of the real concerns that we have about these buses, because infrastructure is a huge problem. And we're concerned about the batteries. You know, there's stories that have been logged all over the world for the past few years about spontaneous combustion. And I saw one just a few weeks ago where there was one that happened in South Korea. This bus blew up in the parking lot, damaged several other cars, and there were casualties. So what they say at TUSD is they're using a slightly different technology. They're using lithium iron phosphate, and that's supposed to be more stable. I am not an expert in that area, so I'll just take their word for it that they're cutting down on the potential for spontaneous combustion, but still doesn't alleviate the problem of where do the materials come from for that? What are you going to do with it at the end of the day? Or at the end of its life, you know, because there's no good way to recycle these things. And then in the meantime, how much of a charge is it going to hold under what conditions? Because these things are very Goldilocks. You go too hot, there's one problem. You go too cold, there's other problems. And I don't think the fact that it's a lithium iron phosphate battery necessarily mitigates that.
Doesn't mitigate anything. Chris, you've got some friends. Ask your guys at Tucson Fire Department what they do when a Tesla crashes into an Ioniq. You know what? Get away from it. They will tell you they don't have the equipment, Chris. They don't have it.
What do you need? I was going to say, what do you need to put out that fire?
When the one we're building here, we're going to have a whole bunch of big 2x2 concrete cubes to put the wreck thing in there, a loader and sand, a boatload of sand. And that's basically it, because Halon is now environmentally unfriendly or whatever, but that's what they put around transformers. You know, suck out the oxygen, you can stop it. But, you know, the fire department doesn't have it. We can't put it in a bucket. A big bucket full of sand and start throwing sand on it. That's how you stop them. And I'm with Peter. What do you do with them 10 years? Where are all these, you know, like all the windmills that are crashed up in New Mexico, big pile of garbage out there. What are you going to do with the batteries? What are you going to do with those batteries? After you had little kids in Darfur digging them up by hand, you know, I mean, literally in mud mines out in the Democratic Republic of Congo, up to their waist in caustic acid, digging out cobalt so we can have this crap or whatever they're digging out. Now, what are you going to do with them later? Fly them to space? They're bad. The whole thing's just insanity.
Peter.
Yeah, Elon's here for us to help with that, Sean. I agree. It's really ironic because there's so much of this that's virtue signaling. And to me, that means that there's some other agenda besides the one that's being portrayed, because this is supposed to be all about being good for the planet, right? And there are so many things about this that are not only not any better than the system we already have, but they're worse. Because you've mentioned a couple of good points. There's a lot of rare earth minerals that have to be extracted that are put into these things. If we're making massive amounts, that is extremely cost and labor intensive. And yeah, it's going to be cheap labor in other parts of the world where we've got kids, you know, doing the mining, suffering for this. And then there's no good way to recycle these. So that is an issue. The energy, you know, people bring this up all the time. Electricity comes from somewhere. It doesn't flow out of trees. You know, it's going to come from coal. gas, whatever. You know, you've got to generate that in some way. People say, well, we're going to use the windmills, we're going to use the solar panels. Well, not anytime soon, we're not. Right now we're using fossil fuels, and all of that electricity that you're using to charge these batteries is coming from that. So you're not really doing anything in terms of emissions there, even if you believe that narrative. And then these things have no range, which is why you have to transport the bus on a flatbed truck between Phoenix and Tucson to begin with.
Sanity.
All right, Sean, thanks for the call-in and the update, man. I appreciate it.
You guys have a wonderful day. Great job, Peter. Love your podcast, man.
Hey, appreciate it, Sean. Thank you so much for listening.
All right, what's the name of this podcast?
Libertarian Minded.
I remember.
Yeah.
All right, I just want to set you up for the, you know, the shameless plug, as we say.
Hey, I appreciate it. Libertarian-minded.captivate.fm, plus on all of your regular platforms.
All right, Peter Norquist, Christy Simone. We're gonna get to a James Bond Spectre Bond villain meeting coming up that he's gonna tell us about. Groovy. All right, Garfunkel versus Oates. This is the battle you guys asked for, and it's happening right now. Christy Simone, Peter Norquist, welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much, Chris. Good to still be here.
Bill number one's here, and he was on the hold from before. Bill, what you got for us today, bud?
Just curious, you know, listening to Sean and Peter talk about the various things going on with the buses, I'm just curious, do these buses where our children are going to be riding in on a daily basis have heat sensors anywhere near where these batteries are located to warn of batteries actually overheating that could potentially cause serious harm to the students riding in these buses?
Right. Okay. So that is a great question, Bill. So this was brought up at the meeting where this was discussed. And so I believe that they said that there are sensors for this. There are battery sensors that provide a readout to the driver so that he can monitor what's going on with the battery. My concern is this technology is all really novel, and, you know, no pun intended, but kind of sort of, no one's really test driven this that much. And so you can have sensors there. We don't really know what is going to happen in real time until someone actually starts testing these out. And that's part of their argument. This is a pilot program, so, you know, we need to start somewhere. But, you know, I don't know.
Well, if a kid gets burned up, it's still the same damage, whether it's a pilot program or not a pilot program.
Right.
Matt, what are you going to say?
This is part of the whole thing. This is part of the whole scam. They're going to get these. They're paying 2, 3, maybe 4x what a standard school bus, a diesel school bus would cost. Oh, and once they get them, they can't use them for 6 months.
Yeah.
So they're buying things today that they will use in the middle of 2026, 2 years from now, right? So because they got to figure out, oh, how far can I go on a charge and how do we redo our routes? And, oh, I don't know.
They don't have the infrastructure to support it right
Correct.
Now anyway.
No, they don't.
That's another price tag.
Well, and that's part of the package. And one of the reasons why I think they're doing this with this pilot program is it's a foot in the door to get the infrastructure in. Because you need that infrastructure to support more buses. So we're bringing in 10 now, but it opens the door for 10 more than 10 more than 10 more, you know, doing as much as you can to replace as much of the fleet as possible, you know, using at least partly bond money. And that's one of the things I appreciated about, you know, Sadie. She said that she did not want to see more bond money supporting more buses after this initial 10-bus pilot program.
All right, we're going to Bill, and then we're going to go back to Matt because I can see Matt's all fired up. Bill,
okay.
Bill, what were you going to say, Bill?
To paraphrase the great Nancy Pelosi, we have to buy the buses to figure out what's in them.
Right. No, that is what we're doing.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate the good call. Matt, yeah, what were you going to say?
Just the EV market's falling apart.
Yeah.
States are realizing that these stupid mandates that say, well, we won't sell a gas powered vehicle in California after 2034 or 5 or whatever it is. Car manufacturers are realizing that they went all in on this. God, Jaguar said, we're not going to make any more gas-powered vehicles, and now all of a sudden, they're not going to have cars for a while. States are realizing that this stupid mandate was a bad idea. Even people are understanding that maybe even Toyota, early on, said, you know, hybrid's a good intermediate step towards something else,
yep.
Right? And so car manufacturers, they went all in. They're exposed. The big three, they're going all in on this, and all of a sudden, they're like, oh, man. I maybe we need to reconsider this.
This is like getting into Right Said Fred 2 years after I'm Too Sexy came out, right? That's TUSD.
Thought all the music was going to be like that. So how did the board, Peter, how did the board vote go? Was it a 3-2 or what was it?
No, it was ultimately a 4-1. It was ultimately a 4-1. The one person who voted against it was Val. Sadie Thank did God. Good on pushback, but I don't want to speak for her. I'm not inside her mind. I'm guessing they gave responses to all the questions that she had, and so I feel like maybe she felt like she was boxed in a little bit. But I don't know. I don't want to speak for her, but so it was a 4-1 vote.
Are there special fire drills that the kids do on the bus? Right, okay, so we have fire drills if there's a fire at the school, right?
Right.
So is the idea that if let's say Bill's right, there's a sensor,
right?
Right. What's the protocol for getting off all the kids before they blow up?
Yeah,
I'd like to hear that one too.
I don't know.
So here's the other thing, right? So we have, and Ravi Shah is warning us that they're going to have a new climate policy that's going to be the biggest, like Trump, it's the biggest, best climate policy in the world, right?
They're going to be winning.
Yeah. Bigly.
Bigly.
Okay. That they're going to do a climate policy that most of their students actually don't have the ability to read.
Right.
Which is just so TUSD.
Right.
Right. And then you're telling me that they had as part of superintendent goals discussion.
Yeah.
Okay. What was, so for enrollment, and they got to that, but what was the expectations for enrollment growth at TUSD?
So the expectations that were discussed were ultimately that they want to maintain a 0% increase in growth.
Yes.
They want to break even because they've gone from 60,000 to 40,000 students recently. And so this is considered basically putting the brakes on.
This is a win. This is a win for them to not lose students as their enrollment goal. Just stay flat.
Yeah, just
that's the goal.
Exactly. Yeah, and so Sadie suggested that they look at a net positive increase. I think she suggested 5%, because the argument is that having zero goals for enrollment when their budget is dependent on students is just kind of it's illogical, right? If your goal is to maintain the fiscal viability of the system and and be there for the students.
Now, I know this sounds foolishly naive of me.
Yeah.
Which I've been accused of many a time. So a real organization would say, why are we in this problem of that now a win is not just being flat on enrollment, mm-hmm. right? What are those reasons that we're losing students, and what specific plan did we put in place to turn the tide on some of those factors?
Okay.
We're not having that discussion.
Right.
We're just saying we're going to do the bigly green deal.
Yeah.
And we're going to, so it's going to be amazing. Will like Gabe get a bonus? That's a question. I know you don't have it in front of you. Will Gabe get a bonus?
Uh-huh.
For keeping enrollment flat,
for keeping it at 0%, right?
Right.
Great question. Who knows?
Right.
I couldn't tell you, but it's a great question.
So then it sounds like they have money problems over there.
Yeah. No, right. There was a big audit discussion at this same meeting where they talked about the electric buses, and you know they had testimony from the internal auditor. Her name is Martha Smith. And, you know, she complained that, you know, she's overworked. She does 80 hours a week, crunching numbers, busting her butt. And she, if I remember correctly, reports directly and only to Gabriel Trujillo, who then basically sort of massages the data in whatever way makes sense to him and then uses it in whatever way that he wants. So
did you, from listening to Martha, did you get a sense that she was intimating that there are some storms ahead?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, she she did more than intimate. She spoke for a while. She gave a really great report. But
her last report for her career.
I hope not. And she was there with one of the people who is on the audit committee, and he gave some supporting information with that backed up.
Do you know who that was?
She was saying, his name was John Blackshire.
Okay. What a great name, Blackshire.
Right?
Sounds like something. Well, that's Blackthorn, the guy in Shogun.
Yeah.
So, so then we're talking about their financial problems, right? It goes back to this story I was telling you about. Val Cavazos, this is August 26th of this year. Two audit reports are detailing serious issues with absenteeism. The state not only has been ordered to repay state funds, but could be at risk for losing more. Right. So they're getting accused basically by the audit in the state that they're misreporting the numbers and that after the magic 100 days, right, they failed after they got their 100 days. That's where you get your check. That's where you get your amount per kid is on that attendance number on the 100th day. Right.
Right.
And then literally it says after the 100 day, this teacher, Ms. Neighbors, she's the retiree. She's like the retiree. Whistleblower. Okay. She literally said, the audit said, the Arizona school formula based on the 100th day, the audit determined the current student process is inefficient, prone to errors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they literally say that after the 100th day, they basically, if their reporting falls apart after they get the 100 days.
Okay.
Welcome to TUSD.
Yeah.
Let's get Pilar on the line. She's running for TUSD school board.
Okay, yes.
Pilar, good morning. What's up, young lady?
Good morning. You guys are talking about lots of stuff that needs to be publicized. So
absolutely. We need you in there, Pilar.
Thank you. So the audit... the auditor who spoke at the board meeting, she is supposed to be reporting to the governing board only. And you have to watch the clip. It was complete retaliation mode. So we all know that.
What do you mean retaliation mode? Explain that.
Well, because she pointed out the truth.
Right.
And the culture is always the same. TUSD doesn't want the truth to get out. They like to underreport. They like to hide things. They want to pretend that TUSD is rainbows and butterflies, and it is not. We need to call out the problems in order to fix them. And then the thing about the buses, you know, we've got huge safety issues and huge proficiency issues, and yet Robbie wants to put a feather in his hat and say he's doing all this climate action stuff. But we've got people showing up at schools wanting to kill the children. We need to get the priorities straight. You know, in 2026, Chris, they have already projected and announced that they're going to have a $17 million deficit and that they just keep kicking the can. That's what the CFO actually said from the podium.
So that's a hell of a number, right? And again, I keep telling you how horrible the media is in this town. That should be a story.
Yeah.
Right? They hit you with all this crap for a $500 million bond, but when it came to the money of running the school district on a day-to-day basis, they're going to be in a $17 million hole next year.
Right.
Yes. That's
TUSD in a nutshell. And Ravi Shah's getting all crazy about his big Green New Deal policy.
Right. Yeah. And then the other thing is, you know, we lose over 1,000 students a year, and they went in the last 7 years, they've increased central administrators from 45 positions to 56 at a 51% salary increase. They don't know how to manage the district to benefit the students.
Well, Pilar, thanks for the knowledge and the call. And again, I hope you get on the if you're going to vote in TUSD, you got to vote for Pilar.
Yeah. Well, we've got her on the air, Chris. Can we plug her fundraiser real quick?
Sure. Let's do it.
Okay. So, Pilar, you have a fundraiser that is coming up on Saturday, September 21st. And that is going to start at 5:30 in the evening and run until 8:30. Do I have all that info correct so far?
5:30 to 7:30.
Oh, 7:30. Okay. 5:30 to 7:30.
Yeah, 3 hours is a bit much.
Okay, and
we have some of the King of Bar. Val is going to be doing the, you know, his famous barbecue. It's going to be at his place. Love to have all the Wakeys there and everybody else. And you can contact me for more info. But let's 1045 North Cherry Avenue.
There you go, 1045 North Cherry Avenue. Do you want to give any of your contact information now?
Sure, my phone number is 520-358-2853.
And what's an email for you? Well, there you go. Peter's futurist guys blew up our phones. So
apparently so.
All right. Anyway, September 21st, 5:30, and it's at Val's Arizona Hearth and
Arizona Grill and Hearth.
Grill and Hearth, and
I always do that too.
Sorry. And it's a fundraiser for Pilar Ruiz running for TUSD School Board.
Yeah.
So try to get one more sane voice on there.
Yeah, and speaking of sane voices, let's just remind people of the candidates. So the people that I think would do a really good job and make potentially sane decisions after the election include Pilar Acosta Ruiz, who we just spoke with, Sadie Shaw, who is up for re-election, and then Esteban Flores, who's a relative newcomer. I've spoken to him. I believe that Esteban would make better decisions than the couple of people who are also running for re-election who I have not mentioned. Chris, you're welcome to if you want to.
Sure. Ravi Shaw and Natalie Luna Rose are more interested in what whoever is telling them what to do. And in the end, what I see is crushing of kids' futures.
Yeah.
That's what I see. So they can get them all excited on their lefty policies.
And spin them out and make sure that they're saving the planet without being competent enough to pull down a job.
All right, Daryl Hall and the other guy. Here we go. Wake up, Tucson. 10:30. The Voice. Grant Kruger's coming up with Vince Leach at the top of the hour. I think we had a good battle today between Daryl Hall, the other guy, and Paul Simon and the other guy. So you're enjoying the playlist today?
Absolutely. I love it. It's taking me back.
All right. So as long as I made Peter happy today, I'm a happy guy.
Now, my dad was a Simon and Garfunkel fan, so I grew up with a lot of the Simon and Garfunkel
love it.
Tunes.
All right. So you were we only have like 3 minutes.
Okay. Excellent. For so, the most important point of a part of the show.
Special executive for counterintelligence, terrorism, revenge, and extortion, Spectre. Right? Is that what you're going to be talking about today?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. So what, Chris, what I want to talk about in the time we've got left is something that I think really is important. So, you know, I keep my eye on the United Nations and all things globalist, right?
Yeah.
And so what's going to be coming up on September 22nd, we've got representatives from countries all around the world that are coming together in New York at the UN headquarters for a
beautiful
meeting called the Summit of the Future.
So
what this is going to do is it's going to be laying out in plain terms what all of these unelected people who consider themselves our decision makers and overlords, what they have in store for us. Because there are growing concerns surrounding the recent expansion of powers granted to international organizations and their leaders. So the WHO's Director General, Tedros Ghebreyesus, has been empowered through a treaty that was signed on June 1st in Geneva. Switzerland is a country where literally every bad thing happens at the globalist level, allowing him not only to declare public health emergencies, but also to dictate national responses to such crises. So this is seen as a significant step toward global governance, which could potentially undermine the sovereignty of individual nations nations all around the world. And the role of the UN and its Secretary General Antonio Guterres is furthering this as well. So part of what is called the Pact for the Future, which is sort of the primary treaty that we're going to be looking at the Summit for the Future, it talks about avoiding irreversible tipping points. And it's advised that all life supporting systems, quote, the atmosphere, air, hydrosphere, water, biosphere, life, lithosphere, the land, and cryosphere, ice, be administered collectively by a global governance body. So that means total control of the Earth system, a planetary commons, and the establishment of a global government, which is what we've been inching toward in fits and starts, right? So
I'm reading the draft resolution for this thing.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for being a quick study. Yeah, while we're talking. So like I say, so at this conference that's happening later this month, world leaders are going to be signing this thing called the Pact for the Future, which is an accord in which member states are going to pledge their allegiance to the UN as a central unifying government.
We're gonna have to do this when you come back.
Okay, I am all for it. Let's lead with it next time.
Yeah, let's just go deep on this.
By the time I see you again in the studio, this is going to be a done deal, so we can talk about its implications for what's going to come next.
And maybe have some awesome, frightening sound bites.
Yeah, so. No, let's look for those. I'm sure you're a master. I'll try to help.
Peter, thank you, my friend.
Absolutely.
Grant Chris. Kruger's coming up next with Vince Leach tomorrow, David Schweikert. I'm going to do all of the propositions during the show tomorrow. Wake up.